This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Kara Miller. Last night, Republican Senator Scott Brown and his challenger Elizabeth Warren met for their second debate, and their performances are getting some mixed reviews. Tempers flared, there were testy exchanges, and the question about Elizabeth Warren's Cherokee heritage is still at play. Here with me in Studio 3 to sort through all of last night's debate is someone who had a front row seat, WGBH TV and radio reporter Adam Riley. Adam, thanks for being here.
Hi, Kara. My pleasure.
So let's just, before the debate even started, right, it's 6:58 last night. What, in your view, was the state of the race? We've seen some very interesting polls come out in recent days. Where were we before we started last night?
Well, I guess I would say that the race seemed to be going in Elizabeth Warren's direction. There's been a flurry of polls which have shown her leading Scott Brown by narrow margins, but by margins that still seem significant. The one outlier was the Boston Herald UMass Lowell poll that was released a little while ago that showed Brown still leading. But the polls have definitely been trending in her direction, and I personally thought that she had a stronger performance in the first debate than Brown did, largely because Brown had this weird sort of agitated demeanor that I just didn't expect from someone who's an incumbent, who I'd consider the front runner, and who is usually a pretty poised performer in these settings. So I thought that Brown really needed to turn things around last night, that Warren had a little more margin for error.
And okay, so then when you watched the debate, did you think that Senator Scott Brown did what he needed to do last night? He did turn that performance around?
Brown was better than he was in the first debate. He didn't seem sort of antsy and twitchy. Instead, he seemed pretty poised and mellow in a good way. He was still able to land some jabs or throw some jabs at Warren that connected. For example, the point, and we may have audio of this, where they were going back and forth on an issue, and Warren tried to talk over him, and Brown said, "Excuse me, I'm not a student in one of your classes. Please let me finish." In the first debate, he was so keyed up that a comment like that, I think, would have come across as two-pointed and,
right,
almost bullying. But last night it didn't. It just seemed like a good, solid hit.
Okay, so let me ask you a little bit about an issue that the moderator at NBC's David Gregory really seemed to focus in on a lot, the question of whether both of them could act in a bipartisan way. So first I'm going to play you a clip from Scott Brown where David Gregory asks both Elizabeth Warren and Scott Brown, what justice do you like on the Supreme Court? Who is your sort of favorite person? And here are their answers. And what you're going to hear first is Scott Brown answering the question.
Who's your model Supreme Court justice?
Let me see here. That's a great question. I think Justice Scalia is a very good judge. Justice Kennedy. Justice Kennedy is obviously very good. And Justice Roberts, Justice Sotomayor, I think they're very qualified people there who actually do a very
Scalia
good job.
Scalia and Sotomayor don't exactly.
Well, you know what? That's the beauty of it being independent, David.
Okay.
If you had to pick one. Listen, I don't need to pick one. We have plenty of justices up there, and I'm proud of the ones we have.
Ms. Warren, who would be your model Supreme Court justice?
I think it would probably be Elena Kagan.
All right.
Adam Riley, we see a pretty succinct answer there from Elizabeth Warren, maybe not surprising since she does teach law. But that was a fascinating, somewhat drawn out, multi-layered answer from Scott Brown. What do you make of it?
Well, there's different interpretations being offered today, as you know. One of them is that Brown said that Scalia was his favorite justice and then realized that since Scalia is someone who is beloved by conservatives and loathed by many liberals, that maybe that was an impolitic answer. So he had to cover by then naming Kennedy and going on to name, I forget everyone he named, Roberts,
Sotomayor. Yeah.
Right. So that's one possible explanation. I know that the Warren campaign last night was already sending out emails highlighting. I believe they cut out the part where he added other justices and just focused on Brown saying Scalia was his favorite. The other explanation, I think, is that Brown is working, despite the fact that he's a Republican candidate and is running under the banner of the Republican Party, he really wants to cast himself as a politician who somehow manages to transcend the two-party system in Washington. And so he, you know, I think usually he's very, very effective at that. This, I think, you could argue is a case where his attempt to show that he is beholden to no ideology and sort of an equal fan of all ideologies and political perspectives made him look a little absurd. I think he was trying to please everyone and gave what, as a result, became a somewhat incoherent answer.
Yeah, it's interesting because you would think that the person who most exemplifies the Senator Brown way of looking at things, at least in the way he talked about it last night, is Anthony Kennedy, because here's somebody in the middle who, you know, votes with sort of one half half the time and votes with the other half half the time, which is really what Scott Brown said. The nice thing about being an independent is that's what you're able to do. You're not a slave to party or to ideology. But it was very interesting mentioning Scalia. Then you saw the crowd react first with cheers, then seemingly with boos, and then Sotomayor. But I think, as David Gregory rightly pointed out, Scalia and Sotomayor don't agree on anything, so I'm not sure how they could both be justices that you like and
Well, that's the
support.
Beauty of being an independent, right? One other moment, when I talk about Brown, again, you know, occasionally lapsing into things that seem a little odd as he sells himself as an independent, but usually doing a very good job.
Right.
One other moment last night that I was struck by was when, pressed by David Gregory about whether he would support Mitch McConnell as the Senate Republican leader if he wins re-election, Brown said that he wouldn't. He said, you know, and I'm paraphrasing here, but something along the lines of, I've made it very clear to Senator McConnell that, you know, there, it's a big mess down there, and he really has to earn my vote. As far as I know, we haven't yet heard what Mitch McConnell needs to do to earn Scott Brown's vote, but I just think that the notion that Scott Brown, who is a Republican senator from Massachusetts, might not cast his vote for the current leader of the Republican Party in the Senate, I just find it far-fetched.
But I don't know that I took that as he will not support Senator McConnell, but more that, you know, he's going to have to talk to me and assure me that he will do things in a bipartisan way.
Well, that's a fine line there. I took it as I actually did take it as an indication on Brown's part that supporting Senator McConnell is, in fact, not supporting Senator McConnell is a real possibility.
Okay.
He's got to show me that he deserves my support. And I think that it's, if I were a betting man, which I'm not, I would be confident betting a large amount of money that if Scott Brown's reelected, he'll be casting a vote for Mitch McConnell.
Okay, I was going to ask you if you thought it was possible that he might caucus with Democrats, well, which obviously, if we are dealing with a split Senate, could give them the chairmanship of every committee, that kind of thing.
I can imagine no circumstances, despite his embrace of a independent identity, and despite the fact that he is a Republican who frequently votes across party lines or crosses party lines to cast votes. Brett Brown is a Republican senator. I can't imagine him rebuffing Republicans in the way that Arlen Specter rebuffed Republicans or Joe Lieberman rebuffed Democrats. I think that's impossible.
Let's look at a question that Elizabeth Warren seemed to have some degree of trouble with. This question that David Gregory posed about, okay, if you were to cross the aisle and do some bipartisan work in the way that Senator Brown has said that he has done, who would you partner with on the Republican side? Who would be your partner? So let's listen to what Elizabeth Warren had to say.
Can you name some Republicans in the Senate today that you are able to work with on big issues, substantive issues that the country faces?
Well, I think probably Richard Lugar would be one that would come to mind.
Well, he's not going to be there.
He's not going to be there.
Who else could you name, Senator?
There's a little Beavis and Butthead feel to that on hearing the audio. I didn't catch that when I watched the debate last night. But
the echoing of not going to
Well,
be
I was thinking
there.
Of Brown in the background kind of going,
But this proved a little bit of a stumbling block for Elizabeth Warren. What did you think?
You know, I actually thought it was worse at the time than I do now hearing it on replay. I mean, it would have been better for her if she had managed to identify a possible Republican ally who is going to be in the Senate during the next term. But when you listen to David Gregory's question, he said, you know, who is someone on the Senate right now who you, I can't remember if he said could work with or can't work with. So I think it's fair to call it a stumble or maybe even a minor gaffe. I don't think it's catastrophic. You know, catastrophic would have been naming someone, you know, Republican moderate who's no longer in the Senate today or something like that. A little embarrassing, but not horrible.
Did it feel like it showed inexperience? You know, Scott Brown, of course, could name a lot of senators. Did it feel like once you went beyond Richard Lugar, who is from Indiana but won't be there anymore because he was defeated, that she couldn't come up with, you know, Susan Collins from Maine or some other moderate in the Senate?
That's a possibility. I mean, that didn't occur to me when I was watching. I chalked it up to more sort of the type of brain freeze that I think all of us mm-hmm. experience periodically when yep. we're talking. And you see politicians, no matter how good they are and how long they've been in office, occasionally just sort of freeze up. But yeah, that's a possible explanation, certainly.
And we're talking about this issue of bipartisanship and the national landscape, which seemed to really factor into last night's debate. I wonder what you think the effect is going to be of the fact that both President Obama and Mitt Romney are going to be on the ballot this time, whereas the first time that Scott Brown was elected, that was not the case. And I should say a recent poll from the Boston Globe asked people not only who would you vote for, Elizabeth Warren or Scott Brown, but who would you vote for, Mitt Romney or Barack Obama? Barack Obama got 57% to 30% for Mitt Romney. That's a pretty big gap, and I wonder how that bears on Scott Brown's chances.
Oh, I would think it makes his job, you know, far, far, far more difficult than it would be if you were running in an off year. I mean, I read in a profile of Warren in the New Yorker by Jeffrey Toobin, I think the number is that there are something like a million voters who are going to be coming to the polls this year who didn't vote in the Brown-Coakley special election, who are probably going to be casting their votes for Barack Obama. And, you know, some of them may decide Brown's a nice guy. I like having a Republican representing the mass delegation. I like having an independent or moderate Republican voice in the Senate. But you got to figure that as partisan sentiments harden as we head up to Election Day, and as passion increases among Democrats, too. You know, for a while, there had been talk that there was this passion gap, that Republicans were far more excited about voting than Democrats. And I think that's pretty much faded away if it was an advantage for the GOP. All those things are going to make it very hard, I think, for Brown to peel off votes from Democrats. I actually thought, though, watching the debate last night, I thought Warren was more effective in the first debate at talking about Brown as someone whose election could help, you know, Republicans regain the chamber. I mean, if you remember, in the first debate, she talked about how if Brown is elected, that could lead to James Inhofe heading up the EPA, and right. James Inhofe believes that global warming is a hoax. She was really sort of pushing viewers to look ahead to the possible consequences of Brown's reelection. And last night, you know, yeah, she talked about him voting in lockstep with Republicans, I think that's her phrase, on things like, you know, jobs bills that were rejected that she would have liked to see supported. But I thought she didn't push the consequences of a Brown win for the national political landscape as effectively as she did in the first debate.
We're talking about last night's senatorial debate with Scott Brown and Elizabeth Warren. I'm talking to WGBH TV and radio reporter Adam Riley. And Adam, let's go right to that sort of final pitch that they made to voters. Elizabeth Warren did have in that pitch the issue of contraception, some of those national issues. But as you said, it didn't play as big a role. But let's first hear what Elizabeth Warren had to say in that final pitch to voters last night.
He's not there for people who are out of work. He's not there for women who want access to birth control covered by their health insurance. He's not there for seniors who are hoping to pay for prescription drugs. I don't want to go to Washington to work for millionaires and billionaires and big oil. I want to go to Washington to be there to fight for working families and small businesses. That's what this is all about for me.
Adam Riley, how effective did you think that was? That was the message that Elizabeth Warren wanted to leave people with.
I think it was reasonably effective. It was good that she found a way to get women's issues in there, because that you know, was a huge focus of the first debate. And if I remember right, until she brought it up in her closing last night, it hadn't come up at all. And I think a lot of the, you know, a lot of the people, judging from, and this is an imprecise metric, but judging from the sign holders that I saw outside the debate last night, you know, there are a lot of female supporters of Warren who are very motivated by what they see as Scott Brown's weakness on issues like equal pay for women or, you know, abortion rights. And I think, you know, Warren needs to hit home again and again the idea that she's going to be better for women than Brown. He has his rebuttals, of course, which we saw in the first debate, but I wondered why she left it until the closing. It's also worth noting, and we may be about to take a listen to Scott Brown's close, but Warren in her close, she talked a little bit about what she wants to do, but the focus was really on Brown's deficiencies as she sees them. And it actually occurred to me as we were listening to that, there's sort of an interesting parallel to the Romney-Obama race, where one of the knocks on Romney is that he has criticized Obama a lot, but hasn't sufficiently articulated a positive vision of what he would do as president. I don't know that it's an exact parallel,
right.
But, you know, Warren spent more time in that close talking about why Brown is bad than why
more
she's
criticism
good.
Than right. Here's my agenda. So let's just do that. Let us listen to Scott Brown making his final 30-second argument to the audience.
You sent me down there to be the independent voter and thinker, and I've done exactly that. I'm with 50% with my party, 50% with the other party, working to try to find people of goodwill to move our country forward. And this election is about doing just that, because we're going to have some very, very real challenges right now. The challenges are getting our economy moving, getting our debt, our deficit, taxes, spending, jobs, national security. And you need people down there who actually work together. And that's what I've been doing, and I need your vote. I can't do this alone. And thank you very much, David, for holding this.
Okay.
Adam Riley, you know what's interesting to me there is, you know, we were talking about national issues before, and the degree to which you did not hear in either one of those closing statements anything about fisheries or construction in Massachusetts.
That's
or
true.
I mean, you did hear earlier in the debate about biotech, but in those closing statements, you heard big oil, women's issues, tax cuts, a 50-50 Senate, the debt, the deficit. It's amazing that they're almost kind of running for president on a smaller scale.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Not fine-grained at all, very nationalized. Yeah, you could imagine closing statements like that pretty much in any Senate race or congressional race in the country.
Right.
Right. I actually should say, just as an aside, I remember watching the debate last night thinking that Brown's closing statement was very effective, and I listened to it as I listen to it now. I think it was actually even better than I originally thought. I mean, it was him at his most eloquent and forceful, and also him embracing this identity of, you know, the lone maverick independent politician running against a system that's broken.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you don't really think that's who Brown is or what he's doing, I think he articulated that vision very effectively in the bite we just heard.
And he features an ad that is on quite often where he says, you know, I supported President Obama's jobs bill. So,
and last night he had a little sort of verbal love letter to John Kerry. Remember, he was
yes.
asked if Kerry would be a good Secretary of State and said, absolutely.
And I've told him so.
Right, right. He's a big Kerry fan. Honored to stand with the president, he said at certain other points, you know, how he's happy to celebrate with President Obama when things go well that he thinks are policy victories. So, no contempt manifested on the part of Brown for President Obama.
One more question I want to slide in here before the end that I've got to get in. The issue that never, ever seems to go away, the issue of Elizabeth Warren's heritage, and let's play...
Okay, how long do we have to talk about this?
Yeah. we could use a half an hour, but we're just going to take a couple minutes. I'm just going to play you a little bit of them talking about it, which lasted, I think, for like 10 minutes. But let's listen to a little bit of back and forth between Brown and Warren.
When you're making a disclosure such as that, when you're actually looking and taking something that is really meant for somebody who has been truly disadvantaged by years of discrimination, I think it's something you really need to double check on.
All right, final point on this. Go
All
ahead,
right,
Ms.
I just Warren. Think on this point that Senator Brown is now raising, he's just wrong. I misheard a question at a very noisy press conference. I came back, I answered it when I understood it, and that's it. To try to turn this into something bigger is just wrong.
Adam Riley, does this have staying power just inside the bubble or with actual voters?
One of the recent polls that we were talking about at the outset, if I remember right, showed that the number of people who describe Warren as, I can't remember if it was dishonest or liar, but one of those two terms, has increased from, I think, 1% to 10% or something like that. And that increase has occurred without Scott Brown's high favorability rating suffering any kind of hit. So I think, you know, this is going to be a close race, and I think that Brown pounding home again and again the idea that, Warren either claimed in an incredible manner that she's descended from Native Americans or used that claim of Native American ancestry to obtain some sort of illegitimate advantage, it does seem to be having something of an effect. Now, in the first debate, remember, Brown took a different tack and came on much stronger on this issue. He started out by when John Keller of WBZ asked the candidates to talk about character issues. He said of Warren, you know, she claimed that she's a Native American, and just look at her. You can see she's not. And that struck a lot of people, myself included, as a little bit over the top. Last night, he was much more precise, and he made a point, and I think this is a point that Warren herself has never fully addressed, and her supporters tend to ignore or minimize. That point is that Elizabeth Warren identified as Native American in law school directories for years. And then finally, when she was hired at Harvard Law School, which is sort of the pinnacle of the, you know, legal education profession, or one of them, when she was hired at Harvard Law School, she stopped identifying herself that way. As far as I know, Warren has never explained why, after embracing that identification for years, she decided to stop doing it when she got to Harvard. And Brown honed in on that yesterday. He said that, you know, she cast herself as Native American, and then she decided that she wasn't anymore. And, you know, I don't know that we're going to hear a forceful, cogent answer on Warren about why she made that change during this campaign. But as long as she can't provide one, I think that remains a perfectly legitimate line of criticism for Brown to
I think
use.
The argument that I've heard her make is that she wanted to list herself as Native American so she could meet other people
right.
with the heritage, but then that didn't seem to be working.
Oh, is
I mean,
that,
at least that's
did
been
she
her
say
explanation.
That's why she delisted
yeah.
then at Harvard?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay.
It didn't
well,
seem
I apologize.
To be happening.
Okay.
But your view is you think this issue overall has probably benefited Scott Brown more then it's hurt him, because this is obviously a double-edged knife you're playing with.
Well, again, if negative connotations attached to Warren, like her being dishonest, are on the rise, even slightly, and if Brown's favorability ratings aren't hurt as a result,
right.
then I think you could say it helps him. But on the other hand, he's been, you know, talking about her being a Native American or not being a Native American for months. And if you looked at the poll trends in those months, you know, she was running behind him, and now she's running ahead. Mm-hmm. So I think it takes a bigger mathematical brain than I have to say whether this helps or hurts. How about signals are mixed or
okay.
the evidence is conflicted?
Sounds good. We'll be watching this fascinating race and talking to you about it again. I've been speaking with WGBH-TV and radio reporter Adam Riley about last night's Brown-Warren debate. There are two more to go. One's on October 10th. One is on October 30th, and that's going to be hosted right here at WGBH. Adam Riley, always great to talk to you about politics.
Thank you, Kara.
And we're going to continue the political conversation with our 30 Issues in 30 Days election coverage. Today, we're looking at medical and scientific research with a focus on what government's role should be in funding this kind of research. I'll bring you that story next on Boston Public Radio. I'm Kara Miller, and you're listening to 89.7 WGBH.